It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and this is our Paddy Prendergast special. A poignant day for Mayo football, as the legend, the icon, and the hero of the 1950-51 Mayo team has passed away. Really sad moment for his family, and everyone in the Mayo News Football Podcast passes on our best wishes to his family. Joining me to chat about this is Edwin McGrail. Sad circumstances, Edwin, but a chance to celebrate an incredible life and an incredible man in terms of his involvement with Mayo football.
Absolutely, Rob. It is a sad day. It's a really sad day in Mayo football. It's a day that was going to come, but I have to admit I'm still surprised, because there was a feeling any time you met Paddy that, you know, he was indestructible and that he could go on forever. And but, you know, life isn't like that. And yeah, he's, like you say, an incredible man. It was a pleasure to ever be in his company. And his deeds and his achievements on the football field were matched by the decency and the integrity of the of him as a man. And I think anyone who has ever been in his company over the years will say that he was a mighty man as well as a mighty footballer.
Coming up a little bit later on the podcast, we're going to hear Paddy Prendergast from an interview from 2018 with myself. In fact, never heard before, some audio that we had in the pipeline for a whole other project. So we'll tell you a little bit more about that later, but it's going to be a chance for you to just listen to Paddy talk about that amazing era for Mayo football and put some context on what they were dealing with at the time, what football was like, West of Ireland, rural Ireland, and all that besides. It was an amazing story. But before that, Edwin, I was lucky enough to chat to Paddy then. You were lucky enough to chat to him about 5 years before that, actually, as well. And I think both of us remembered that interview as just a special moment that we won't forget. That's the kind of impact he had on people.
Yeah, and like the first reason most Mayo people would enjoy talking to Paddy Prendergast is because he's an All-Ireland senior medal winner from Mayo, and there's only one of that panel left now, Dr. Mickey Loftus, and all members of the starting team have passed away. And but you know, that was the first reason most people want to speak to him. But when you got into his company and he was in fine storytelling form, it was just such a pleasure to listen to him talk about the men from that era, talk about football back then, talk about the journey subsequent to that. And he had just so many great stories and so many great memories. And I was fortunate enough to spend 2 hours in his company ahead of the 2013 All-Ireland final in his in the family home in Cranmore in Ballintubber. And yeah, it was one of the most memorable interviews I think I'll ever have the pleasure of sitting in on. He was just he was just a marvelous guy to be in the company of.
And the timing as well, poignant also, because it's a 70-year anniversary has just passed last Thursday of the 1951 win, the last time Mayo won the All-Ireland. And these things do seem to sometimes align in strange ways. And that's just going to get people thinking more about the impact this team had on the county. There's been some great pieces written. There's books out there that are incredible reads. They aren't just any group that won an All-Ireland. Edwin, maybe they are, maybe every group has an amazing story, but it was a story of a group of men just coming together and saying, look, we're going to sort stuff out. They've missed out on a few All-Irelands in the last 15 years, and that's regrettable, but we know what needs to be done, and they got it done.
Yeah, and like, it was so apparent talking to Paddy about the bonds that existed between that group. And you would have heard it from other members of that group as well, and he'll say in the interview here about the sheer brilliance of the individuals in the group from an academic point of view, and from a footballing point of view, obviously, as well. But, you know, there was so many medics in there, so many solicitors, engineers, and he, you know, he often praises John Ford as being the most intelligent of them all. And John didn't go to university at all. He was a plasterer in Ballina. And Paddy Prendergast is on record as saying they should have won 4 All-Irelands, that they underachieved. But he also found it very hard talking about those members of the team, particularly those he was closest to, the likes of Mick Flanagan, Sean Flanagan, because they had passed away. And, you know, I saw someone on Facebook, Terry Riley, actually, from the former Western People editor, saying there'll be some conversation in heaven tonight with them all reunited. And yeah, it's you know, whether you believe in the afterlife or not, it's a lovely thought.
Just talk to me about, like you were saying to me, meeting him it went from being just a quick chance to talk to a legend to a long, long chat that remains with you. There's been times in the last couple of years you've been quoting Paddy Prendergast in different articles and re-quoting him because it just left such an impact on you.
Yeah, I definitely knocked enough value out of the interview, all right, you know, but over the years.
We should all do that.
it was one of those I was coming away with and I was like, my God, that went far better than I could have expected. Because, you know, you're speaking to someone, and this is the thing, like, and we would always say it in journalism, if you're speaking to someone over the age of 70 and certainly over the age of 80, you know, an hour tends to be as good as you will get. And I went there, and it was organized by a relative, and he says, you know, you might get 15 to 20 minutes. And all I wanted really initially was to, you know, for Paddy to talk about the hope that another Mayo team would take on the mantle. And I ended up talking to him for 2 hours. And I'd say I could have stayed talking, but, you know, I felt I had been there long enough. But yeah, that interview, he was, he said, you know, that one of the things that used to annoy him, and I think he'd be wary of some journalists and coming into him, was, you know, most journalists coming to speak to him for the last 10 or 15 years up to that, they only want to talk about one thing, and we all know what that is, the godforsaken curse, and that used to get on his wick, like. But he was also happy to talk about it from a point of view of setting the record straight and explaining the nonsense of it, you know, and how it only, he heard nothing about it until after the 2000s, you know. So that wasn't my first question to him, and Paddy brought it up himself, and you know, I felt you know, it was something that he was entitled to speak about on his own terms, you know. I wasn't going to press him on it, but he explained a lot of his own personal feelings on it and how it felt for him as, you know, one of the people who were apparently subjected to this ridiculous nonsense. And that was, I think it was good to get that perspective on it.
I was thinking there, he was roughly 64 when Mayo got to the 1989 All-Ireland final. So, like, you spoke to him a lot about his yearning to see that breakthrough, but like his overview on the weight for the breakthrough was something else, really.
Yeah, because this is the thing, like, even though he was living in Kerry for the rest of his life, Paddy's, his love for Mayo, and in the interview you'll hear, he might kind of project an indifferent attitude to playing for Mayo at times, and saying that, you know, he was happy as Larry in Donegal, and he was probably laid back enough about things. But when you're talking to him and you listen to him talk about his time following Mayo after he finished playing, you know that inside him, you know, was a passionate Mayo man, and he mightn't have said it explicitly, but it was very apparent from the fact he went to Mayo games year in, year out, league games, championship games, all around the country, you know, despite being down in the southwest of the country. You know, he was a diehard, you know, and if there was a season ticket at the time, Paddy Prendergast would definitely be qualifying for the 70% attendance in a lot of years. But he coined following Mayo teams, and we talk about all the All-Irelands from 89 onwards, like, but he would have, you know, particularly painful memories of the years that they underachieved and couldn't get out of Connacht, and were, you know, watching Galway in the 1960s win 3 in a row, and Mayo competitive with them some years in Connacht, very competitive with them, but couldn't get past them. And when they did, they couldn't go as far as Galway. And he described his own journey as his own Via Dolorosa, which, for those of you, and I had to Google this the first time I heard it as well, I'll have to hold my hands up. It's the Latin for the way of grief, and it's the route taken in Jerusalem by Jesus Christ carrying his cross on the way to his crucifixion. And maybe it is an apt comparison to Mayo football at this stage. But yeah, Paddy was, you know, we talk about journeys in the modern sense, but Paddy was on a long journey, and he was hoping to see another Mayo man other than Sean Flanagan lift Sam Maguire. But that just didn't happen, unfortunately.
He uses the phrase the green and red an awful lot, you know, and I just think it speaks to the real history of what it meant to wear the Mayo jersey. I don't know how much over time, you know, maybe we forget, you know, that like this All-Ireland final that has gone as just a dot in time, if you like, in terms of all the people who've worn the jersey. But I just you'll hear in the interview that's following this, and you would have heard in past interviews, it's just every time he says it, it's just, yeah, it almost sounds like people talk about wearing the All Blacks jersey in rugby, you know, that kind of way. And like, you can say what you like about the troubles Mayo have had to win All-Ireland, but there is an immense pride. And for that group, I think they felt an immense power being from Mayo, which is amazing in and of itself.
Yeah, and the other thing I think that's very apparent from talking anyone that would have spoke to Paddy, and he conveys it in his interview with you as well, is his frustration at how Mayo have sometimes been their own worst enemies. And it's something that we've all spoken a lot about in recent weeks, you know, but like, he would have spoken about the famous letter in 1947 that got the county team off its knees, and because of, you know, I suppose, a lot of inaction on behalf of the county board, the players took control, you know, and ended up winning four Connacht in a row and two All-Irelands in 50 and 51, and could and should have won in 48 and possibly in 49 as well. And he would have regrets about 1955 as well, where they lost to Dublin, I think, in a replay. Would have been very frustrated with, this was a time when there was a lot of selectors. There wasn't a manager per se. There was two trainers, Jackie Carney and Gerald Carell, but they had no input into the team. And even in the 1950 final, he was furious, even in 2013, talking about the fact that a goalkeeper was put in goal who had never played in goal for Mayo for the final, and the regular goalkeeper, Sean Wynne, who had the full confidence of all of his defenders, was dropped. And first ball that came in, the goalkeeper made a bit of a hames of it, and you could only make a substitution in those days if you were injured. And Sean Flanagan went in, basically started shouting at the sideline, "He's hurt, he's hurt, he's hurt," and told the goalkeeper to pretend he was hurt. And the goalkeeper was changed to Mayo in the All-Ireland. But he, you know, he talked about all the different moments over the time where, as far as Paddy was concerned, there was no curse, only a self-inflicted curse for Mayo in terms of decision-making and administration over the years and management decisions. And that's what really frustrated him. And when you look at it back and look at, I suppose, what he would have witnessed over the years, it must have been incredibly frustrating for a man like him who was part of the greatest team this county has ever known, that sometimes we've been our own worst enemies.
All right, before we link to the interview, Edwin, you want to kind of give us a final thought?
Yeah, I think it's when we're talking about Paddy Prendergast, it's worth talking about where he's from and the pedigree in his family and in his area. And Paddy is the king of them, but it's incredible that a Prendergast brother played at fullback for Mayo across five decades. His brother Tom in the 30s, Paddy in the 40s and 50s, and Ray in the 60s and 70s. And he's from a part of Ballintubber that's famously known as Ballintubber's Golden Mile. The fields around Cranmore, I think they should try and build as many houses as possible around there, because there's certainly something in the water. But you have the Prendergast, you have the Feeneys. Most recently, people would remember Richie and Alan. Their father, Ger, is from that part of Ballintubber. The Gerrities, Ger Gerrity, the star of the under-21 team in 1983. The Lallys, and of course, the O'Connors, who need no introduction. All from, you know, less than a mile apart from each other. It's an incredibly rich area for Mayo football. But the king of them all still is Paddy, you know. And he's remembered so fondly in Ballintubber, even though he's been down in Tralee for so long. The Ballintubber club have kept a very strong relationship with him over the years, particularly Tony O'Connor, the club, Dermot and Killian's dad, who's the current club chairman. Himself and Paddy were very, very tight. And our sympathies today absolutely go out first and foremost to Paddy's family, but also to everyone in Ballintubber. Like, you know, he was such an icon there, and an icon throughout the county. And it really is the end of an era today.
Okay, this is the first time anyone's going to hear this audio, but it was for a TV project that we were doing down in Tralee with Paddy back in 2018, actually. And it was recorded outside. You're going to hear his garden that he was so proud of. The reason why you're going to hear the garden is because it was full of birds chirping away in the background. So that should give you a bit of atmosphere, but it will give you an idea of the setting too. He was really proud of his work in that area of his life in his retirement. And it was just great to get this opportunity to sit with him and chat. The story begins with him up in Gweedore, where he was stationed with An Garda Síochána, and Mayo in need and just asking them to come back down. And as Edwin has highlighted, it's a certain amount of indifference initially, but once it took off, well, it really went from there and it really led to an amazing run for that Mayo team. So may you rest in peace. Our sympathies, obviously, to everyone in the Prendergast family. Thank you, Edwin. Let's have a listen to this. When you started, you were in Gweedore and the lads heard about you playing football up in Gweedore. You were stationed up there.
Yeah.
When they wanted you, because you played a bit for Donegal as well. So when they asked you to play for Mayo, what did it mean to you to play for Mayo?
I didn't want to play for Mayo.
Really, first of all?
Not at all.
Why?
I was playing for Donegal and I was happy as Larry.
Right.
I was stationed there. I knew them all. I knew all the lads and we played matches in Monaghan and Tyrone and all over the place.
Yeah.
So I was quite happy there. I didn't know. I hardly knew Mayo, you know.
Yeah, you've been out of it for
time. I'd been out of it, you see. And I didn't know that. I didn't know the members of the team, except Mick Flanagan probably are one or two more, you know.
Yeah.
And so that I had no desire at all to play for Mayo, actually. Because I was happy as Larry playing with all the lads I knew, the Donegal, members of the Donegal team. You know, and travelling more Sundays.
How did they manage to persuade you to all of a sudden switch to Mayo, back to Mayo?
She was over at me, I suppose, for a while. I promised somebody a dude that sent me one of these declaration forms or something. I was shamed nearly into doing it. You know, a Mayo man, and you're being told, you're a Mayo man, you won't play for Mayo. You don't want to play with your friends in Mayo, you know. And I suppose this gets to you. I don't know, really, because I was as happy as Larry playing with Donegal.
When you did join up with the lads, what changed? Was it the fact that there were so many quality? They were a better football team than Donegal, obviously, at that time.
I suppose that was part of it. But you see, I had, you know, people like Gerald Correll,
yeah,
that Joe Correll, that former, that great Mayo football fans, our trainers, our players. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gerald Correll played for Mayo and others, you know. And you got this thing, you're a Mayo man, why would I play for Mayo? It was like that, really, you know. I suppose one day you kind of said to yourself, geez, maybe I should play for Mayo. It's my county, and I suppose that was it, basically.
How did you build a rapport with your new Mayo colleagues then? How did you build up a friendship with them? Was it the training? You said you had 2-3 weeks training in Ballina, and that really helped.
That's right, yeah. Mm. Well, that was it, you see. I wouldn't have known many of them. I'd have known Mick Flanagan, possibly. Mick was Castlebar, of course, so he wasn't too far away. But I wouldn't have known Carney or Tom Langan or these, you know. I had never met them. Why should I want to play with them when I was, as I said, all right, it's sort of the red and green.
Mm.
But apart from that, why should you want to play with people you never met, you never knew, you know?
But the training helped, those weeks together helped build a rapport.
Very much so. You see, because it was collective training. We lived in Ballina in Mrs. Gaughan's. It's a family situation now. We slept there, we got our food there, we played cards, we came back after training. You know, no matter where you were, you came back to where it was like our own home.
Mm.
You know, and of course, naturally enough, you built up strong relationships when you sleep in the same room as fellows. You know, and you're at the same table every morning, and we used to go for a walk there for maybe 5 or 6 or 7 miles fast walk in the morning before training. We were a unit, like a family unit, really. More than anything else, you know.
That must have played a big part in your ability to come back from the defeats and eventually win the All-Ireland.
Oh, I suppose it did, actually, because they were an extraordinary bunch of people, you know. They were way more advanced than I would be in that thinking and so forth, and that they knew so much more about Mayo and Mayo football than I did. And then you had people, yet very bright. Jesus, they were very bright. You had probably 5 or 6 medics, doctors.
Yeah.
You had 5 or 6 lawyers. You know, you had 3 members of the Gardaí, and you had probably the smartest of all, John Ford, who was working in Ballina. He did timber work and everything else, you know. And as I said, John was very, football wise, he was very strong. But like, you know, that we had, and then we had one farmer, and we had a fellow who was in the Air Corps, and we had, it was very easy. You know, count the people we had.
Mm.
As I said, we had, I think, 5 medics and 4 or 5 lawyers. So all we had to find was 4 or 5 more. So they were a very talented group of people, actually, you know.
Yeah.
And and very dedicated. You know, the red and green was written across the floor nearly, you know. And they were great bloody footballers, you know, Carney and Lang and Paul Carney and Flanagan and Mongey and these. They were superb, you know, really.
What would you say to young people who are looking to wear that green and red? What's the most important aspect of pulling on that Mayo jersey?
Well, I suppose really, you know, the majority of the lads who play football, they would like to wear that. They would love to wear the red and green, you know, because the red and green, before ever I was able to play football at any level, the red and green of Mayo, you know, was very important.
Mm.
It was the green and red, no matter how you looked at it, you know.
Yeah.
It was extremely important. And then as we, you know, in rural Ireland, as we grew up, you know, and were playing for a club at 12 and 13 or 14 years of age, and I can tell you something, that the sideline you'd have would be very, 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 very strong-minded, you know.
Mm.
And, you know, the people, we used to play at Ballintubber. That was my club, you know.
Mm.
And by God, the support in Ballintubber was something else, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, they'd fight a battle for, you know, really. Because they were real supporters. And they saw Ballintubber team as their team. And they had no respect for any other team, really. Not really. Can you imagine rural Ireland then?
Of course. Why do you think football means so much to us?
Because I suppose there was nothing else, really. What else was there? You know, you had the odd sports during summertime. One or two meetings where you had 100 yards and 250 yards and jumping, high jumping and long jumping and, you know, simple gatherings of people. That was the only thing apart from the football. There was no hurling, of course.
Mm.
And football was very important, like, you know, to all levels, actually, to all the people that I knew anyway.
The 50-50 woman, it must have given Mayo people such pride.
Absolutely, just unbelievable, really, you know. I think that the Mayo people were a special breed of supporter, you know. They were fairly close to the players and that, and they got to know the players, and they followed them. Whether they're from Belmullet or Bangoreras or Trumachidia or wherever, they follow the team, you know. Maybe it's because they were hungry for success. You had a great Mayo team, in my opinion, between 36 and our arriving. But we hadn't won anything in that 12 years, you know. And that was the problem.
Mm.
You know, you had great footballers like Patsy Flanagan, Henry Kenny, and Peter Laffey, all the people we knew, you know. Great, it was a great team. For some extraordinary reason, we only managed to win one All-Ireland during those years, you know.
What would you say to a young person who's just starting out in his Mayo journey? Very young, 14, 15, just beginning in a development programme, joining one of these new teams.
Well, the first thing he has to do is enjoy playing the game and develop, you know, a strong relationship with the people who play with him. It's very important to know that you're capable. I think that's it. That if by making enough effort or by trying hard enough, that you're going to achieve something. Because it's a county with a great tradition that produced wonderful players, like, you know. Going back to Patsy Flanagan, Henry Kinney and some of our fellows. We've produced some of the best players that ever played Gaelic football. And so when I think of our team, you know. When I think of, and today they stand out today, the same as in, I'd see, like, Tom Lang at full forward. Impossible to beat, like, you know.
Yeah.
Sean Flanagan, Corey Kearney, these fellas. You couldn't beat them because they didn't accept defeat. Mongey. And I remember playing Meath. But who were, I think we were in the hotel in Dublin on the eve of the match, you know. And Langan, we were all in one room, you see, and Langan had me sitting in a chair. I was full back at the time, you see. Sitting in a chair in the middle of the room. So he'd come up fast and try and sidestep the chair.
Hmm.
Because I was there. I was the opposition. If he sidestepped me, it was a score, you know. And he tried and tried and tried, and he found it extremely difficult to get to where he could score, you know. The very first ball he got against Meath, straight in, sidestepped Paddy O'Brien as if he wasn't there, back of the net. That's what they were like. They were an extremely competent Mayo team. Football was a huge part of rural Ireland at the time, you know. In every village and parish in the country, football was extremely important. Whether it was Ballintubber or Ackle or Newport, like we played, we had, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 teams, club teams now in Ballintubber. And of course, the competition there was like all Ireland's, like, you know. Yes, you can imagine. You know, we played Ackle, we played Newport, we played Westport, we played Lewisburg, and rural Ireland was a very simple place. And I would say myself, you know, that during the week, the only discussion, or most of the discussion, was about Sunday, like, what? Yes, we're playing Lewisburg next Sunday, like, you know. And everybody would be talking about it, you know, really. Mayo was a very, it was a strong football county. All the areas of it.
And it still is. People still... still care as much. It doesn't surprise you that they still care,
does
it?
You're quite right, like, you know. And there's fierce depression among spectators.
Well, where does the hope...
Supporters.
Where does the hope come from every year, do you think? Because every year they come back.
They do. They're amazing. Because it's like a legacy, you know, really. It keeps coming. It's you know, they automatically, like, think of winning a Connacht Championship or thinking of heading for the All-Ireland, you know, and winning an All-Ireland, yeah. Which they have thought about and should have won several times.
Yeah.
Do you know, really? So they're occupied, you know, you can imagine.
Yeah.
Whether it's in Ballintubber or in Cairnacone or in Westport, you know, or Lewisburg.
Yeah.
Jesus, I tell you something. They're fiercely, you know, involved.
They won't give up on it, will they?
Not at all. No way. Like, you know, it's extraordinary how strong the feeling for the game is. It's a big county too. You know, you come from Ballycastle, and of course, great friendships were developed during all over the county. Like, you know, whether it's in Clare Morris or in Colchama. Or Charlestown, you got to know the people and they supported you and you knew they were supporting you and you were friendly with a lot of people in all these places. Well, I was anyway, maybe because I travelled to these places. But it was a special time, sure. We won 5 Connacht, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we won Railway Cups and we won National League, you see. So it was a huge part of our lives. It's what I did too, like, it was responsible for creating very strong friendships between players. Sean Flanagan was a great friend of mine. I spent a lot of time in his house, like, you know. And when Pádraig was Pádraig Kearney was doctoring in Mayo, we visited him quite regularly, Mick Flanagan and myself. And of course, Mick Flanagan was a great friend of mine in Castlebar and that, and the lads. And there was a great friendship there. Among the people who played for Mayo, no matter where they came from, whether it was Kilmaine or Ackle or anywhere else, you know, you became friendly with the people in the parish. That it's just the whole county was united in this very close relationship, you know.
And that's why it's going to be important going forward that they keep this going and keep absolutely. These young people coming together to play for Mayo. Right?
Absolutely. I don't know if we ever see it.
Well, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah. No.